The Gift of Idleness.
Here is a comic song by Offenbach about a singer who lacks technique. It is performed by a singer who claims to have had no voice, but had the longest professional career in recorded history.
Or plus la danse est à mon avantage, c'est là, mon plus grand attrait, et danser n'est pas commode. Trop la 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 près des femmes le jarret, la 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 n'est pas ce qui m'ennuierait.
That was the Swiss tenor Hugues Queneau, who sang professionally for 64 years.
La 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 la.
In the mid-1950s, when I was a poor student in New Zealand, I knew some young men who were the privileged possessors of a record player. It was in their rooms that I first heard the unearthly voice of Hugues Queneau singing Elizabethan love songs. Almost a decade later, in 1966, I was astonished to find myself with Queneau singing in Mozart's Die Zauberflöte at the Glyndebourne Festival Opera in England. Once, as we were chatting at Glyndebourne, I told Queneau how much I detested giving auditions. He said, quite unpretentiously, "I have never auditioned." He explained that he had been asked to sing when he was young, and then others asked him to sing, and that was the story of his life as a performer. Hugues Queneau was born in Corso-sur-Veve, Switzerland, on the 16th of June 1902. His grandfather was the mayor of Corso, and the family lived in an 18th century castle. Both Queneau's grandmothers were English, and he is descended from the Churchill and the Spencer families. He has claimed to be 50% English. He never liked school and has often said that he was lazy. His musical ability was noticed even when he was still in kindergarten. As a child, he heard many monumental performers, including Camille Saint-Saëns and Paderewski, later Prime Minister of Poland, performing together at two pianos. Here's a snatch of Paderewski playing a polonaise in A-flat by Chopin. Same gathering in Veve, he heard the great Russian-born soprano Felia Litvin sing a long piece by Saint-Saëns. He has said, "She was so big she seemed like a whale." Only a hint of Litvin's great talent shows through the ancient sound quality of her 1905 recording of Voi lo sapete from Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana. At At the age of 16, Quesnot went to study piano at the Conservatory of Vevey. From there, he progressed to the Conservatory of Basel, where his piano teacher was Willy Rehberg. He found Rehberg narrowly Germanic, so he switched his major subject to singing. Colette Wies, a young soprano on the verge of a distinguished career, gave him his first lessons. She started him off as a baritone, which, for oratorio repertoire reasons, forced him to sing bass arias for his first exams with an orchestra. Still, he was crazy about singing, although he said he didn't have any voice. He attended every opera performance high up in the cheapest seats. He heard Debussy's Pelléas et Mélisande and Ravel's L'Heure Espagnole, a work in which years later he was to perform many times. He even was hired as an extra. At this time, he struck up a strong friendship with Helen Garden, sister of the great Scottish-American soprano Mary Garden. Despite their age difference, he was in his early 20s and Helen Garden was in her late 30s, they went dancing together in Montreux. Occasionally, Mary Garden joined them. Mary Garden had created the Debussy role of Mélisande. She also annoyed the composer Massenet by appropriating the main tenor role in his Le Jongleur de Notre Dame. Here is part of her 1911 recording of an aria from the opera. In 1925, Quesnot went, armed with his Basel diploma, to Vienna, where he studied with Mina Singer-Burian. He rebelled against her rather dull view of his potential, but later said she had done him no harm and at least lifted his voice securely to the tenor range. Quesnot has often described himself as superficial. In other words, he enjoyed himself. His so-called superficial charm opened the drawing rooms of Vienna to him. At the opera, he saw Richard Strauss conduct Wagner and marveled at the singing of the sopranos Elisabeth Schumann, Lotte Lehmann and Maria Jiritsa, the tenor Richard Tauber, the bass Richard Meyer and the incredible Italian baritone Mattia Battistini. Here is the divine Elisabeth Schumann singing Richard Strauss's cradle song in 1927. In Paris in 1927, with Helen Garden, he finally heard Mary Garden in Pelléas et Mélisande. He met luminaries in the worlds of music and art. He sang the music of Maurice Jobert in some films and had walk-on roles in others, but Quesnot's heart was in music. In 1928, Quesnot made his stage debut when the French conductor Désiré Émile Engelbrecht engaged him for some performances of Krennic's Johnny Spielt auf, in French, Johnny mène la danse, at the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées in Paris. The distinguished Romanian pianist Clara Haskell, then unknown in Paris, accompanied him in private recitals of songs by Mozart, Haydn and Schubert. Quesnot has said it was marvelous to sing with her because she followed him with flexibility and subtlety. Here, Clara Haskell blends skillfully with violinist Artur Grumio in this excerpt from their recording of Mozart's sonata K526 in A major. Quinault's friendship with Mary Garden brought him a part in Noel Coward's Bittersweet, which opened in London in July 1929 at His Majesty's Theatre. The story was of a young girl who was determined to marry a cabaret singer. Quinault especially remembered a quartet which represented Oscar Wilde, Alfred Douglas, Aubrey Beardsley, and a fourth character played by himself. Noel Coward was afraid that it might cause a big scandal, but the public greatly enjoyed it.
Witty boys, you may sneer at our disintegration. Haughty boys, naughty boys, dear, 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 swooning with affectation.
Our figures sleek and willowy,
our lips and carmine eye,
may worry the majority.
But matron, rich and billowy, invite us out to dine
and revel in our phosphorescent wit.
Faded boys, jaded boys, come what may, art is our inspiration. And as we are the reason for the 90s being made, we all wear a green carnation. Pretty boys, witty boys,
when Quinault's British work permit elapsed, he accepted Coward's offer to join a company touring Bittersweet in North America. During this tour, he met the distinguished black American tenor Roland Hayes, whose interpretations of Schubert and Negro spirituals he greatly admired. Later in Paris, influenced by a tenor friend of Hayes, Quinault made arrangements of Negro spirituals. He aimed to remove superimposed European accompaniments, which he thought drowned out the songs. In 1935, the director of La Voix de son Maître in Paris asked Quinault to record some of his Negro spiritual arrangements on shellac 78s. This was one of his very first recordings.
My Lord, what a morning. My Lord, what a morning. Oh, my Lord, what a morning. When the stars begin to fall, when the stars. Hear the trumpet sound to waken nations underground. Look into my God's right hand when the stars begin to fall.
Quinault returned to live in Switzerland while retaining his strong Parisian links. Pierre Maurice, a Genevan composer, engaged him to perform the role of Bruno in Maurice's only French opera, Mise et Brun, produced in 1932 at the Grand Théâtre in Geneva. The opera was successfully toured through Switzerland. Quinault then joined a group of singers called the Minstrels, who performed operettas by Offenbach, Plonkett, and Terrasse, and little comic operas like Pergolesi's La Serva Padrona. In the Minstrels, he met Jeanne Lequien, with whom he performed a duet team. They were called Bob and Babette. Seated at the keyboard and crooning in a style which amused him at that time, Queneau performed in some bars and nightclubs in Switzerland, Paris, and Brussels. He had to give up such activities as his career grew, but the hilarious memories stayed with him. In 1934, he sang in the Swiss premiere of Stravinsky's Les Noces under the direction of Ernest Ansermet. It was Queneau's first major classical concert in Geneva, and he found it a total joy. Queneau enormously enjoyed working with Ansermet. Their collaboration lasted until Ansermet's death in 1969. Queneau's recordings with Ansermet included Ravel's L'Enfant et les Sortilèges and Stravinsky's Oedipus Rex, Les Noces, and the lively burlesque Renard. In 1934, an odd chain of events led to Queneau making the acquaintance of the French conductor and teacher, Nadia Boulanger. He had been singing in a Bach cantata at a German church in Paris, and a Finnish singer took him to Boulanger's studio. As soon as they were introduced, Boulanger asked Queneau to sing the tenor aria from that cantata. Then she analyzed it for her students and invited him to participate in her weekly theoretical lessons. At Boulanger's suggestion, in London in 1935, Queneau sang in the premiere of Paradise Lost, a work for solo voices, chorus and orchestra by Igor Markevich. Queneau had long known this young Russian, who grew up in Vevey, and he admired his compositions. Markevich became better known as a conductor, however. Queneau has denied being Boulanger's protégé, but says she influenced his style and the orientation of his career. After meeting her, there were many things I never sang again, he once said. I became totally taken up by the music of Monteverdi, Jeannequin, and Perrotin, composers I discovered under Nadia's influence.
Se le rose che coprite, si scoprite mi ferite. Fille le stelle che si belle e si vaghe risplendere, se ridete mancidete, se ridete mancidete.
That was a recording made in 1937 of Monteverdi's playful setting of an anonymous love poem, Chiome d'Oro, in which a lover apostrophizes his lady's golden hair, that's the Chiome d'Oro, her lips, eyes and voice. This recording was an immediate success. The pianist is Nadia Boulanger. A later recording with instruments of the period is delightful, but the immediacy of Boulanger's rhythmic pace on the piano never fails to lift this listener's spirits. The other tenor is Paul Durenne, who also went on to make an excellent career. Queneau has said that listening years later, he was unable to tell which of the two was singing, so similar were their voices. Boulanger's circle included the Princesse de Polignac. She was an American heiress to the Singer Sewing Machine Company and a very generous patron of the arts. She commissioned major compositions from, among others, Ravel, Satie, and Defalia. Queneau has said that the princess adored music sung by a group, so Boulanger's singers often performed the madrigals of Claudio Monteverdi. A marvelous conjunction of talents took place in Boulanger's circle when the inspired young Romanian pianist Dinu Lipati was introduced to Queneau. Lipati was only 19 years old. It seems just right that two such gifted musicians should have met. Lipati joined Boulanger in providing the four-hand accompaniment of the vocal quartet, including Queneau, in a recording of Brahms' Liebeslieder Valses. Sadly, I don't have that. However, here is Lipati's setting of Paul Éluard's poem Capital de la Douleur, sung by Queneau in 1951, a year after the premature death of the composer. His widow, Madeleine Lipati, is the pianist. The celebrated composer Francis Poulenc was a constant presence at the Polignacs' home, and he and Queneau became close friends some years later. Together with the pianist Jacques Février, the critic Claude Rostand, and the amusing composer Henri Sauguet, they used to comb through scores of operas by Lully and even Gounod for anachronistic editions in order to rediscover the original versions. Copious glasses of champagne lightened the task. Queneau returned to the United States with Nadia Boulanger three times from 1937 to 1939. He spoke about her in a telephone interview he gave to Hawaii Public Radio when he was 99 years old. The interviewer is Gary Hickling.
You were also pushed to do this by Nadia Boulanger?
Yes, I met Yana Boulanger in the 30s, I suppose 32 or 3, and worked with her an awful lot. And I went to America three times with her to sing in her lectures. We went in Boston and in New York, and even she conducted the Boston Symphony and the New York Philharmonic, and I sang at those concerts with her.
Was that of Baroque music?
Well, we did music by her sister, Lily Boulanger.
Queneau illustrated Boulanger's classes for various universities, schools, consulates, and musical societies. She conducted the New York Philharmonic Orchestra in Carnegie Hall and the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The Boston Orchestra's conductor, Sergei Koussevitzky, invited Queneau to sing the following year with two famous singers conducted by Boulanger. To his horror, he found that he was on the program to sing in Fauré's Requiem, which has no tenor solo part. Boulanger hurriedly rewrote a tenor chorus piece for tenor solo, and the situation was saved. Queneau returned to Switzerland a few days before the outbreak of the Second World War. Then he went back to Paris, where he had many and varied engagements during the so-called phony war, including a concert in a railway station to raise funds for departing troops. He also gave concerts with Nadia Boulanger in Belgium. Then they gave a concert in Geneva, just before they learned that German troops had entered Paris. When a prominent baritone was unable to leave Paris for the Basel premiere of Arthur Honegger's oratorio La Danse des Morts, Queneau replaced him, although the part was a little low for his range. In 1940, Jean Villard, a popular Swiss writer, composer, and singer who called himself Gilles, opened a cabaret in Lausanne. A center of resistance to the Nazis, it was called Coup de Soleil, or Sunstruck, and Queneau thought it shone amid the surrounding darkness. He performed there at the keyboard. He sang songs composed by Villard, some Negro spirituals, songs by Eric Satie, and he rounded off the group with Poulenc's Chanson Gaillarde. He repeated this bracket several times each evening. Listen for a moment to this impudent waltz by Queneau's friend Francis Poulenc, played by the composer. It encapsulates the defiant irreverence of the era. Was trapped in Switzerland, Queneau took a teaching post at the Geneva Conservatory. It was an unhappy experience. He found it was a completely useless activity because he had never understood his own technique, and he based his own singing on a kind of instinct. He thought his muscles had learned to act on their own. That's why he never gave lessons on vocal technique. I remember that he said to me, "I know what I do, but I can't tell you what to do." He was happy to know that by not meddling with the voices of his pupils, he at least had not misdirected them. However, he did like to give instruction about interpretation, especially prosody, which he called singing grammatically. He said to always think of words and pronunciation. He based his teaching on the French language. Later, as his career in opera developed, he came to specialise in brief but conspicuous roles that made an impression on the audience, like the holy fool who laments the fate of Russia in Mussorgsky's Boris Godunov, or Monsieur Triquet in Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, or Selim in Stravinsky's The Rake's Progress. He was particularly noted for comic and grotesque interpretations. The immediate post-war years were a time of numerous concerts and productive relationships. One was with Ernest Bohr, head of the Opera of Strasbourg. Queneau sang under his direction, and Bohr accompanied him in a chamber music concert in which Queneau sang La Bonne Chanson en Forêt. Bohr also engaged him for some operettas broadcast on Strasbourg radio, and then some operas at the Théâtre. Queneau also sang in the Strasbourg Festival. Bohr asked Queneau to form a vocal quartet, and he engaged, among others, the stunning little soprano Maria Stader, who never looked back after that opportunity. Listen to her singing this fragment from Mozart's Die Zauberflöte. Queneau also did radio operas in Luxembourg with the conductor Henri Poncy and often sang for the BBC in England. In 1947, in Strasbourg, he began to sing and record the Passions of Bach with Fritz Müsch, brother of the conductor Charles Müsch. Years later, Queneau was asked if one must have religious faith to interpret this kind of music well. He replied, I think most people would answer such a question in the affirmative, but I would say the contrary, because I don't have what they call faith. There are often decent, honest old ladies, those who are called church hens, who come to compliment me, telling me how religious I am. To them I bow agreeably, a little bit uncomfortable, because I don't wish to cause them any pain. But at heart, I must say that I've never been religious. I become something like that when I sing, because I cannot perform such music if I don't have some kind of momentary faith given me by the music and the text. The powerful opening chorus from Bach's Passion According to St. Matthew illustrates Queneau's point. There is no arguing with the spirit of this music. In 1950, after a chance meeting in Paris, Queneau was engaged by the American conductor Jonathan Sternberg for a series of recordings of Bach's cantatas. During the recording sessions in Vienna, Queneau made the acquaintance of Daniel Pinkham, a young harpsichordist who had been a pupil of Nadia Boulanger in the United States. The two became immediate friends and together recorded some forgotten cantatas of Heinrich Schütz. This led to a 2-year contract with Westminster, a label well known at that time for its recordings of early music. Further recordings were made in Paris. Then Queneau left for New York City, where Pinkham was waiting to make even more recordings. He stayed in the Dakota Building at the edge of Central Park. Queneau gave one of his New York concerts in the Dakota, which has long been a home for artists. Many opera singers, writers, composers, and critics have lived there, including John Lennon, who was murdered in its doorway in 1980. Pinkham and Queneau went to Boston to record one of the Tenebrae lessons of François Couperin and some works of Rameau and Boismortier. The Couperin record drew high praise from critics and musicians, and Queneau received an award for it in France, although he himself has said that it was not at all a disc for the general public. Igor Stravinsky owned the disc and liked it so much that he wrote the part of Selim the auctioneer in his opera The Rake's Progress, specifically for Queneau. The world premiere took place in Teatro La Fenice in Venice on the 11th September 1951. The chorus and the orchestra were from La Scala in Milan. Queneau found it a wonderful experience to be close to Elisabeth Schwarzkopf's performance as Anne Truelove. Here is part of a recording of Queneau's performance in the premiere of The Rake's Progress, conducted by Stravinsky himself. Keep an ear open for the miraculous comical high notes which Queneau pops in with apparent ease.
A king, an organ, golden apple tree, a block of copper, Mr. Malcolm, pillar, octopus.
Come.
At 99, Quinault's voice radiates the happiness of that time as he reminisces in this radio interview.
It was really an opening for me, and I'd made a nice, quiet career until then. And when Stravinsky asked me, he wrote a part for me without really wanting to, but he wrote a part that was perfect for me, that I did well. And every theater director, every singer, every manager, every important person in the public was there, and it's as though I'd given an audition to all these people. I would have had to do, I don't know, 350 auditions to reach the same public. I did it well, and it opened every door for me.
I understand.
It was a very great thing, and I was very indebted to Stravinsky, whom I knew very slightly at the beginning, but who became a very good friend. And he asked me for two or three of his next compositions for the first night.
The Rake's progress was a tremendous boost to Quinault's career. In 1952, the year of his 50th birthday, he was given a part in Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier, directed by Herbert von Karajan at La Scala. Later in the year, also at La Scala, he sang the captain in Alban Berg's Wozzeck, and at Aix-en-Provence he sang Don Basilio in Le Nozze di Figaro. That same year, Quinault recorded an album of Elizabethan love songs with the harpsichordist Claude-Jean Gerson. Here is Go to Bed, Sweet Muse by Robert Jones.
Go to bed, sweet muse, take thy rest. Let not thy soul be so oppressed. Though she deny thee, she doth but try thee, whether thy mind will ever prove unkind. Oh, love is but a bittersweet jest. Muse not upon her smiling looks, think that they are but bitter hooks. Love is a fancy, love is a frenzy, let not a toy then breed thee such annoy. But leave to look upon such fond books. Learn to forget such idle toys, fitter for youth and youthful boys. Let not one sweet smile thy true love beguile, let not a frown forever cast thee down. Then sleep and go to bed in these joys.
During the early 1950s, Quinault started teaching interpretation again, despite his unpleasant experience during the war years. In his teaching, he was interested in the words that carry the voice, while the voice itself interested him as an instrument and a means of interpretation. He has said he always had very little voice, and that had obliged him to pay great attention to the words. Too beautiful a voice could be a handicap in interpretation. The more beautiful the voice, the more singers forgot to interpret. There were some singers who never thought about diction and the words they sang. They put no meaning behind the words. They didn't take into account that some words must be separated. They forgot the commas. They interpreted nothing, so their singing became boring. Hugues Quinault began his long association with the Glyndebourne Festival in 1954. He made his debut in the Rake's Progress and then sang in Le Nozze di Figaro. Over the following decades, he would sing at Glyndebourne more than 460 times. My first impression of Hugues Quinault, the man, is indelible. He was sitting very upright and alert in an armchair in the green room. His dress and demeanour were modest, and he emitted an aura of alert vitality and pleasantness. He had absolutely no side. Although he was an established performer with a great body of recordings, he behaved as though he were just one of the company. I was impressed by his general deportment. He was extremely erect. His small, elegant head seemed to be suspended by some invisible string. His bright eyes darted around the company, and he missed nothing. His movements were fluid and contained. He and I got chatting about the great French composer Olivier Messiaen. I was deeply under the influence of that composer, and I had just attended a piano recital by his wife Yvonne Loriot, who had performed the vast piano work The Birds. I am a passionate bird lover, but my enthusiasm had turned to surprise and then to a desire to escape from a work and a performance which I found increasingly bombastic. What happened? I asked Queneau. Did he dry up? Quite the contrary, Queneau replied. He got diarrhea. In The Marriage of Figaro, he played the character role of Don Basilio, a dotard who fantasizes about his youth in this aria.
Il turbine nemmo due passi, c'è fiera orribile, gli anzi a me passi. Già mi tocca, l'ingorda bocca, già di difendermi, se me nono.
Under the fine stage direction of Karl Eber, Queneau took part in Glyndebourne revivals of the operas of Francesco Cavalli as well as Monteverdi. In Cavalli's La Callisto, he played a travesty role of a moralizing old nymph. He wore an 18th-century wig, a grand dress, and long flat breasts filled with birdseed. The nymph was dragged into the woods by satyrs who wanted to give her greater pleasure. Here Queneau sings another Cavalli drag role. The old queen Sofonisba laments her lot. Ah, tristo scelerato.
Oh, tristo scelerato. E io non creduto l'avessi. Era ci soli amor sul fior degli anni, ma quando il bel cadè, son tutti inganni. S'appresta la beltà, tinta di vaghi pur farsi sembianti,
In Die Zauberflöte, in 1966, we wore bizarre costumes beautifully designed by the great Italian designer Emanuele Luzzati, who drew on traditional tarot cards for his inspiration. Queneau was in voluminous blue with a blacked-up face and a turban, and I had webbed feet, a bird's body, and a white face with a blue mouth. He was very tall, and I was short. Neither of us appeared on stage in the finale, and both were elated by the music. Backstage, we used to seize hands and whirl around together like children until we were dizzy. I feel that I have always been his friend, although we never met or communicated again after that season many decades ago. In 1954, Queneau also took part in two recordings which are still famous today, Strauss's Ariadne auf Naxos under the direction of Herbert von Karajan and Ravel's L'Enfant et les Sortilèges, directed by Ernest Ansermet. In the latter recording, Queneau sings three roles, the teapot, the green frog, and this terrible little old man who personifies arithmetic.
De robinet coule dans un réservoir, de grain omnibus qui fait une gare à 20 minutes d'intervalle. Val, val, val. Une paysanne, zan, 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 porte tous ses œufs au marché. Un marchand des coffres, coffre, 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 a vendu 6 mètres de vin.
Mon Dieu, ça m'arrive petit.
Tic, tic, tic.
In 1956, Queneau was asked to sing at the wedding of Prince Rainier and Grace Kelly. Years before, in Paris, Rainier's father had asked his great friends Nadia Boulanger and Queneau to make some music for his children. Prince Rainier remembered a particular tune, hence Queneau was asked to sing Bach's Bist du bei mir during the ceremony. In the 1960s, Queneau founded the Baroque Ensemble of Lausanne, in which he sang and recorded the works of Monteverdi. Queneau has described Monteverdi as the principal composer of his life, one who pushed the limits of his musical imagination in all his works. This Sancta Maria shows the extraordinary and human dimensions of a composer whom many, myself included, revere beyond most others. That was performed by the Vocal and Instrumental Ensembles of Lausanne, directed by Michel Corboz, a conductor with whom Queneau often performed Monteverdi. Here, Queneau sings Monteverdi's Nigre Sum from the Song of Solomon with the Instrumental Ensemble of Lausanne.
Amica mea, sorge, sorge, e veni, veni, amia, affinit, impera vitem, et essi, flores a favore, rompit terra nostra.
In 1964, Queneau sang at the Rome Opera in The Marriage of Figaro, directed by Luchino Visconti. He has described Visconti as one of the best stage directors he ever worked with. Visconti, an aristocrat with Marxist convictions, asks Queneau to play a part in his latest film, The Stranger, based on the work of Albert Camus. But Queneau had other commitments and declined the offer, something he always regretted. The 1970s brought awards for Queneau. In 1972, he celebrated his 70th birthday in Boston, performing in Honegger's La Danse des Morts. At the end, he was called onto the stage, and a red ribbon carrying a large medal of Boston's oldest musical group, the Handel and Haydn Society, was hung round his neck. He was given the keys to Boston and made an honorary citizen. In 1972, Queneau also began recording for the Nimbus label. In addition to songs by Debussy and Fauré, he recorded Eric Satie's Socrate, which won a worldwide Prix du Disque. Queneau returned to Glyndebourne for his last regular performances in 1975. He sang in two productions, Leos Janáček's The Cunning Little Vixen and Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. The Czech composer Janáček based his opera on a comic strip. Most of the characters were wild or domestic animals. At Glyndebourne, Queneau sang in the costume of a rooster. The critic from the London Times said of his performance, "Mr. Queneau's cock was outstanding." Being superficial, Queneau liked to tell that story. In the 1980s, Queneau began to perform less often, either because he was thought to be tired or he did not wish to sing pieces he had not done for a long time. However, in 1986, he returned to fine form when playing Triquet in Eugene Onegin at the Geneva Opera. The following year, 1987, he played the old emperor in Puccini's Turandot at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. It was his first appearance at the Met, and he received rave reviews. At 85 years of age, Queneau is the oldest person ever to make a debut at the Metropolitan Opera. He continued performing in Turandot well into his 86th year. Listen carefully, and you will hear him sing a couple of bars. Clarity always tells. After his performances at the Met, Queneau went to Glyndebourne, where he sang Monsieur Taupe in Richard Strauss's Capriccio. While in England, he also gave classes at the music school founded in Aldeburgh by the composer Benjamin Britten and the tenor Peter Peers. In London in 1988, Queneau gave an 86th birthday recital at the Wigmore Hall. Next year, he sang Monsieur Taupe for the last time at the Grand Théâtre in Geneva. Queneau made his last appearance on stage in the autumn of 1994 at the Théâtre du Chausseur at Mézières. He agreed to sing a final performance of Monsieur Triquet in Eugene Onegin. During the dress rehearsal, there was a great hailstorm and the temperature plummeted. Queneau caught a cold and was unable to do the first performance of the opera. He managed to do the last two and was not happy with what he did in them. He said afterwards that he really regretted doing that final Monsieur Triquet. Although he had stopped performing, Queneau continued teaching well into his 100th year. Here's another clip from the interview he gave when he was 99 years old.
You have set records for the longest vocal career in history.
My first concert was in 1928, and my last was in 1992. So you can imagine how long that was.
But I didn't think you had stopped singing.
Oh, well, I've stopped now, of course, because I stopped when I was 90.
I heard that you were singing well into your 90s in Switzerland.
I gave master classes and I sang a little bit with my pupils and I sang a few songs, but I didn't give real concerts anymore.
I see. Are you still giving master classes now?
Yes, one or two, but not many because it's very tiring to have to teach, you know, for a long time. But I do have pupils that come and sing for me, and I give them a lot of tips about how to do it.
With regard to his longevity and ability to sing beyond the age of 90, Queneau professed that it was a complete mystery to him. he told the Swiss writer François Udry. I do what gives me pleasure. If I want to drink, I drink. I even used to smoke. I'm of the opinion that an ascetic life, one deprived of the good things in this world, is not at all advised for those who sing, because that makes you sing in an uninvolved manner, perhaps. I think the secret of all this is that it's necessary to be Epicurean. The pianist Graham Johnson has written that for years Queneau lived in unashamed pursuit of uncomplicated sensual pleasure, which enriched him musically and as a human being, though this surprised others. The profoundly religious Nadia Boulanger had been astounded by the harmonious marriage of Apollo and Dionysus. A law giving same-sex couples most of the benefits of marriage came into force in Switzerland on the first day of January 2007. In the same month, Queneau, aged 104, entered a civil union with his partner of two decades, a 64-year-old retired Swiss civil servant named Alfred Augustin. When Queneau was 94, he told François Udry, I believe my existence can be summed up by a completely secular trinity. The gift of music, the gift of idleness, and the gift of being kind and agreeable with my friends. Voila. The late American poet W.D. Snodgrass wrote a poem about Queneau. It appeared first in the New Criterion. Here are some lines from the poem. 50 years back, when I first heard you sing, I thought, the poems I've written lack for nothing but such clarity, such passion. And he says later on, Queneau sang through 60 years unchanged by travel, time, or untold cigarettes. At 85, you called your debut at the Met a little bonbon after lunch. How could I lose my voice, you were known to banter. I never had one, just a dry, white, unmannered mask tone with the bel canto breathing that carried your song's deep impulse truly from mouth to nerve ends like a fine, rich pouilly. Why not just say, one voice for all seasons? Here, most aptly, is Monteverdi's Beatus Vir, Blessed Man, performed by the Vocal and Instrumental Ensemble of Lausanne, directed by Michel Courbeaux.
Idleness is a local Radio France production, presented by Janet Kenny and produced by Rob Godfrey.